Lang's Fountain was a cornerstone of the community for many years. It was a true old-fashioned soda fountain. You could order phosphates, ice cream, or stop in for coffee and a paper. It was a place that brought people together, a place that you could linger and mingle. Ethel Lang ran the fountain for the better part of her life alongside her husband, Earl.
Ours is strictly, it was like a, almost like a pharmacy without the drugs. We were the first people to handle newspapers. And we had the Duluth, the Minneapolis, the St. Paul, and Canadian papers. And then on the other side, we had the Wall Street Journal and some of the gossip papers like that. And we had, of course, handled ice cream, candy, books, paperbacks, and we had comics, of course, and candy and dairy products, milk and eggs, and had Norcross greeting cards. And we had in the back of the store, we had what they called, we were told we had the largest magazine section this side of Chicago. And it was across the whole back. And then up in front, of course, we had the candy case and the cigarettes, and then we had a big rack with the aspirins and no prescriptions, but we had just about everything else. And we had, I think, about 22 stools.
Leslie Peterson worked at the fountain in the summer during her teenage years.
Because of the way the soda fountain was set up, it still had those classic, I can still picture them, the classic stools that you could spin that were aluminum with a red vinyl-like top, and the low counters with the heavy, like, porcelain dishes that you never see anymore. And everything was in the coffee pots for the old-fashioned kind of, now they're all glass. Back then they were, I don't know, some sort of metal. And then the napkin dispensers were all, I mean, everything was of that kind of time period. And then the square patterns on the floor just was all very much set up to be that way. So it did feel kind of old-fashioned to me at that time, even then. Yeah.
Hello, my name is Buck Benson. I'm just talking a little bit about a part of my life that happened quite a long time ago, but will always be there, and that's the story of Lang's Fountain. It's also a place that was reflects a much quieter time in our lives, at least the lives of those old enough to remember that, because the life was paced a lot slower. When you went into a store, they took time to talk to you, find out what was going on. Much more a part of your life than just going into even my store now, and you know it's busy and you just hand the money and out the door you go. At that time, it was a very social thing to go down to a store and hang out.
You could see exactly what was available, you know, from all the, you know, because all of the ingredients for the sodas were lined up. There was a mirror on the east wall, and all of the ingredients for everything you would make were lined up there. You know, a very colorful display, the Green River, the orange syrup, the chocolate, all of the syrups, the cherry for the cherry Cokes and the cherry root beers was all lined up there. And it was just friendly and comforting. Not off-putting at all.
Mary Igo was a coworker of Leslie's. She got the job through a friend while in high school.
Well, there was really a lot to do. It was a soda fountain, true, so we had to learn all of those, the different phosphates and the sundaes and the milkshakes and the sodas. And, well, a phosphate, at Lang's we had all sorts of base syrups, like strawberry, cherry, chocolate, vanilla was the big seller. We had something called a Green River, which was lime, and you'd put maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches of syrup in the bottom of a glass, put in a scoop of ice, and then add charged water. and stir it a little bit. People really liked the vanilla. I never did, but it was just a mellow drink, a fountain drink made fresh. You know, I would guess there are people who have never had a real live fountain drink anymore. And we put them out like nobody's business. You know, we had something called the Pink Lady, which was two scoops of lemon and one scoop of strawberry. And we had something called the Suicide, which was a squirt of all the syrups. And if you were really daring, you'd have a chocolate suicide because you'd put the chocolate in too, and then the ice and the water.
And a triple suicide was everything you could think of that we had behind the counter. You would pour in and then add the soda, and it would come up this gosh-awful color. But they really actually were quite good. I was surprised the first time I tried one. I was like, whoa, you know. But they were pretty sweet, as you can imagine. But they got ordered a lot. I remember making a lot of triple suicides and Green Rivers and chocolate sodas.
And we always served a cookie with the coffee. And we had a Springer Spaniel. In fact, we had three different ones. But Mandy used to follow us down. After we got down to work, she could walk all the way down and come in the store, and she'd usually go right into the back room and lie down. But then she'd come out and she'd stand by the person with who had the cookie, and she so they ended up by giving her the cookie, you know. She knew just where to go, and she knew that she wasn't supposed to be there, so she'd go right in the back room and look out.
I'm Sandy Lancashire, and I'm the daughter of Earl and Ethel Lane. And then we also had this Whirl-a-Whip machine, and that was from the old fountain moved into the new fountain, and it kind of made like a Dairy Queen. It had this big machine, but when I was little, I think that was my favorite thing to have, was a Whirl-a-Whip. But then when I started working at the store, it was so hard to make because the ice milk was always just as hard as a stone, and you had to scoop it out, and I'd always kind of resent when someone would order a Whirl-a-Whip.
Stacy Droulard worked at the fountain in the early 80s. It was her high school job, and she worked mostly on the weekends. She grew up going to the fountain with her family.
Oh, it was very exciting. I mean, it was sort of like how my parents bribed us to go to church on Sunday. So we got to go to Lang's and pick out candy afterward. And yeah, it was just a great space too. I mean, it was old fashioned. And it was a newsstand too, which was an important thing. For Grand Marais, I think, because the entire back wall was magazine racks filled with every magazine you could ever imagine. I mean, everything from like Women's Wear Daily to Better Homes and Gardens to like auto and motorcycle magazines. And as a teenager in Grand Marais, I mean, we had like three channels on television, and I remember just loving going to the magazine stand at Lang's and kind of like picking out magazines and spending like my entire paycheck on magazines, because it was like the window to the world at that time, you know. So it was not only an ice cream fountain, but it was an old-fashioned newsstand in the truest sense of the word.
Oh, another thing about Lang's is that they had comic books, they had all sorts of magazines, but there was one magazine that didn't get put out, and that was a Playboy magazine. That sat under the counter, a little stack of them, and you had to come in and ask because they were a little too risque to be out there. I always thought that was something.
Cindy Hansen's family lived in Hovland. Cindy was a lot more interested in the comic books than the dessert menu at Lang's.
Lang's Fountain, when I was a kid growing up in Hovland, everybody talks about the fountain, but my memory is not the fountain at all, but was right behind the fountain. And they had this unbelievable kind of in the dark recesses at the back of the store, kind of the Never Never Land back there, were the most amazing comic books. And we would get our weekly allowance, and we'd go to town once a week from, you know, Hovland to go grocery shopping and whatever. And my sister and I would peel out of the car and wail over to Lang's and go in and run to the back. And, you know, they were like 15 cents a copy and 25 cents for the, you know, coveted double edition. And we bought comic books in there and my mom still has them all. And they were Archie's and Dennis the Menace's. We weren't into, like, you know, Spider-Man or any of that stuff, but just the fun Archie's. And then every once in a while there'd be the, you know, Betty and Veronica edition or whatever. And so we would buy comics in there and then bring them up to the old glass counter at the front. And, you know, I was never, ever tempted by the fountain. I just blew right by it back to the back where the comic books were.
It was always amazed me as I left and got older how Lang's was able to survive on what they sold. And now that I've been in retail all these years, I'm still amazed at it because it was all small things and it was all slow. It wasn't fast-paced. So I think Earl and Ethel were able to do it by, you know, living that small-town life that we don't really... Even this town has changed so much now, I don't know that it has that same... It could ever have the same flavor and the same pace.
I remember lots of times new people coming into the community would make a point of staying there for a while, you know, on a daily basis just to kind of get introduced. Mr. and Mrs. Lang were very gracious people with newcomers and making sure that they were introduced to other people that they thought they might have a relationship with at some time.
You know, in retrospect, I feel pretty honored to have seen the Lang's Fountain from the inside out. It was a really good, it was a good learning experience because he was a very patient teacher. He's a very kind boss, and he trusted people. And I think, there's many, many people who worked there over the years. I mean, they were, such a huge part of the downtown, businesses, and had a real specific niche for many years. So, I just feel honored that I learned how to make a true, root beer float from Mr. Lang. And it's, you know, it's kind of sad now, you know, when you walk by there and there's just nothing, even resembling, you know, the original store or anything like that, you know. It's too bad it couldn't have been restored somehow or kept intact but, you know, like, what can you do?
Well, they were just the loveliest people. It says a lot to a young person when you're working for somebody and, you know, they trust you to go home and go have their evening meal and let two 15-year-old girls watch the store. You know, they were just very good about, first of all, letting you know exactly what they expected, which goes a long way. You know, if you know what's expected, then you're going to do what you need to do. They also allowed us to have fun, but they... they really put us in positions of responsibility, you know, and they treated us well. You know, there were regular raises, you know, if they went on a trip, there were little gifts. I mean, they were just very kind people. And a lot of us were lucky to be under their tutelage. I think it helped us to know how to be a good employee for other people as well.
They were so kind, and they were so calm and quiet, and I'm sure every kid that grew up here has a memory of walking into Lang's. You see this magical candy counter, and you're just looking at it going, oh, what am I going to get? And Mr. Lang will say, well, come around back and choose your own. And you always felt like you were the only kid he ever said that to. And I remember almost being kind of sad later when I found out from other friends, oh, you got to do that too? You know, but that's the way he was, you know. And Ethel, Mrs. Lang, was the same way, very quietly kind and just open to everybody. So, you know, it's just that magical combination.
My name is Richard Lang. I grew up in Grand Marais. I'm the son of Earl and Ethel Lang. And I began to work in Lang's Fountain when I was 11 years old, and the year was 1956. Well, he was very encouraging, you know, for people. I mean, the people, you know, the children of his business colleagues would often get a job working, you know, in the store. And so he was very supportive of people who worked there and continued to be interested, you know, in them when they went off to school and had families and so on.
Oh, and of course, Earl was, everybody loved him. Everybody loved him. He was a very good person. And he's kind of the official greeter for people coming in town.
It was sort of mysterious. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Lang were sort of mysterious. They were real private, and Mrs. Lang really didn't talk a lot. She was very, very quiet and very soft-spoken. And so there was a little mystery about them, I think. I remember that, you know, he was always very, a very hard worker, but once in a while he would just stop and something would crack him up and he would just double over and do some knee slapping laugh that was hilarious, and you just never knew when it was going to happen. And it was, I can just see him doing that now that I think about it, you know. They seem to have just a total devotion to each other. That was very sweet, and you got the feeling that he really took good care of her.
They are fabulous people, were fabulous people. Stately is the word that keeps coming to mind for me for Ethel, because even then and even now, whenever I see her, she is just a remarkable woman. Many people here in town have to know that. I mean, she carries herself with such poise, and she did then and she does now. She probably has the most perfect posture of anybody in all of Cook County, and always has had that, always impressed me. And her husband Earl, the same. Very, you know, would very sit very upright, which is hard to do on those little old-fashioned stools. There's no back, you know, so. And they, like, they were very kind and very patient and very interested in people and always just really warm to anybody who came in the store. I know a lot of us would chuckle sometimes at Mr. Lang because he would move at a snail's pace. He got a lot done. He was a huge man physically, big man, but he would move really slow. And I know we're on radio here, but a lot of us still remember he had this classic wave, and it was just his arm would come up very slow, and his hand would move like to the side, and that was the wave, and then the arm would come down again very slow. He did it all the time. And that's some of the things I remember about him. And he was a very good-looking man. And he and Ethel were seen together. I mean, they were together every day. I mean, they were both down there. I don't think I can really remember a time being there when they were not there together.
Well, it brought people together. And like after the football game, everyone would go to Lang's, or after the movie, everyone would go to Lang's, or it was just, you know, a meeting place. It was just open. And then my parents were just, they liked to help people. And if someone was in need and they could help them, they would help them. I know they would send things out, like to the kids at the school at Grand Portage. You know, they were just they really are good people, and you know, such people are always an asset to any community. And my dad too, he was so dependable, real calm, and you could always count on him for anything. He was. I realized that when he passed away, it was like the rug had been swept out from under my feet, and I was just standing on nothing. It was, he was really like a rock in my life. He was so calm and stable, and you could count on him and depend on him. And I'm sure that a lot of people who knew him, who came into the store, felt the same way. And my mom is so compassionate and so understanding, and she's that way with me, and I know that she has been that way with countless people, you know, who have come in the store.
I never learned how to take a vacation. I tend to just put my head down and work and keep working. No, I think there was a work ethic. I mean, with Lang's Fountain, my father was there, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, he had people who worked there, but basically he would come home at 10 o'clock at night, and that was the rhythm for, you know, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And so I think you learn that life is difficult, that nobody is exempt, that you have to appreciate what you have, even if it's minimal. I mean, there's the phrase about living life on life's terms. It's not easy, and you do what you have to do. Well, that's not right. You do what falls to you to do. In other words, there are things, if we pay attention, that are up to us. There are tasks that are up to us, and if that's what falls to us to do, if that's what your life brings you, then that's what you do.
The hours were long. I didn't put in that many hours until, like Earl was having surgery in Minneapolis, and I had to go down, and it was like 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, because we got all of the papers came in, and some of them we had to assemble. And then, you know, then work all day, and then the bus came in about 8 o'clock at night, and we had a Greyhound bus that came from Canada to Duluth. And we'd have to wait for that, and then the store would be just crowded, people coming in for the Minneapolis Star and the evening papers. And so it it made a long day, you know, especially Sundays.
You know, I guess it just, it's just one of those things that gives you a strong sense of your hometown and what that means, you know, what's hometown and small town means, because, you know, you would go in and he would know your favorite kind of candy, and, you know, he'd had little nicknames for everybody, and he would tease everybody, and he just had, I think he, you know, one candy bar at a time, he, like, made everybody feel good.
It's like I said in the beginning, I mean, Mr. Lang inviting me to come around and pick my own candy and making me feel like I was the only one in the world that got to do that. You know, he made you feel special. And when you're a kid like that, that's pretty cool. And so what now if I know every other kid in town got to do it? That's great. They all felt special. And, you know, that was a nice gift.
Well, I think that other establishments in town have picked up the mantle of, you know, a place for people to gather and have their coffee and things. But I don't think there's anything quite as neat as Lang's Fountain was. Just the family feel to it, the things that you could buy there. Yeah, it was a special place for me, and I think for a lot of people my age and older. I get a little emotional just because it was fun and nice people, and yeah.
I think it's really too bad that there's nothing left of that place, you know, because it really was it's almost like a historical site, you know. For a lot of people who lived in Grand Marais and were here as kids. And it really doesn't resemble anything like it, you know, it used to. Now it's not even recognizable. And things, you know, things change and people change and businesses move in and out. But it is kind of sad to think about it, you know. I can just see the inside of the store even now, you know. So it must have left quite an impression on me.
Well, I think what I miss most is just that it's not there. I mean, that option isn't there anymore. You know, how fun it would have been as my kids were growing up to keep a relationship going. I think I just miss that it completely went away. You know, it's that slice of life that was Grand Marais that's gone, and that's sad.
But what I value, you know, I don't miss the fact that there's not a Lang's Fountain. What I value is the experience I had when I was a part of it, you know. I mean, there were my dad and I would go to the high school basketball game in the gymnasium, and you know, toward the end of the game, we'd sort of work our way to the door, and then you know, watch the end, and we'd hop in the car and drive down, open the store again because it would have been closed during the game, and people would come in after the game for some, you know, soda or something like that. And so those were important times together.
It's important within the context of Grand Marais history, certainly, to remember the place and to remember that feeling of picking out what kind of ice cream you wanted and what kind of candy bar you wanted. And there's something really slow and deliberate about a place like that that is hard to find now. You know, now people get ice cream through a drive-up window, and you know, you go in and you take a number and you're herded like cattle from one window to another. And the food isn't necessarily handled in a careful way, and there's very little art to it. And I think that's why it's important to remember places like Lang's Fountain. Just a slow sort of deliberateness about it that's missing in a lot of ways now.
Well, I think it was, I think it's an example of how people can live in community. I think, you know, as I was saying before, where we are living in such a polarized time when you have television ideologues holding forth day after day after day, and when you have such a polarized culture, one can value Lang's Fountain, that experience, as a model for people having civil conversation, having civil discourse. And you can say, well, we did it once, we ought to be able to do it again. I mean, unfortunately, I think that in terms of where our culture is, it's going to be quite a while before we can work this thing through. I think if you have had an experience of community, I think it's just more hopeful. I think you can be more hopeful. And I suppose if I can bring this back to sitting around the counter at Lang's Fountain, what I knew when I was a boy was that there were a lot of different views and people had different ideas of different worldviews, and that somehow we had to figure it out, you know.
The fountain now, it's just kind of a memory, you know, a memory. And I think the word fountain is so significant because, you know, it's like a fountain of life. It's like a fountain that taps into the source and it nourishes people. And but even then, even though the actual building is a memory, the people we met and the friendships we made, they still exist. They always will be. And really, that was the real gift for us, to our family of the Fountain. The people we met, you know, the wonderful people we met and the friendships we made, and they really are endearing and enduring.
History Speaks, Recollections of Lang's Fountain, was produced by Barbara Jean Johnson, with support from Kelly Schoenfelder and Anna LaRova. The project was made possible in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.